Before we start, Strange Circle is a narrative podcast, best listened to in sequential order. So if this is your first time, why not go back to episode 1? Enjoy the show. From the Journal of Moses Noth. I told Aunt Daphne the whole story, starting with the pieces Jerry had filled in for me. She listened to it all, lying on a deep red chaise that matched the colour of her lipstick. She was patient, interjecting only when she had a relevant question. I had met her 20 years ago. My good friend Daisy was known for throwing some quite outrageous parties. She'd been my psychology lecturer at UCL, a post she still holds today. I was completing a degree in comparative religion at the time, and regularly met Daisy for drinks and a good chat. She told me she wanted me at the party for some light relief, and that she could always rely on me saying something offensive to someone, which I took as a compliment. The smoky room I entered the next Saturday evening was filled with senior university staff, at least 5 politicians, and a scattering of students who must have all still been in their teens. I immediately noticed the woman holding court at the kitchen table. Tall and statuesque, with a head of grey curls that covered her shoulders. This was the Aunt Daphne I had met 2 decades ago. And it just struck me now, as I am writing this, that she did not look any older this time around. Another indicator of her esoteric prowess, perhaps. I finished my story with the aftermath of the so-called virtual exorcism. And to her credit, the first thing she did was ask about the well-being of everyone involved. She made me promise to get the details of Barry, Derek's engineer, who had been so badly burned. I imagine she will try and help him. Then she began to chastise me. What on earth was I doing recommending such a ritual in a case that I knew was complicated? I managed to trot out a few excuses about how Derek and Jerry had been desperate, and how we thought if we waited any longer, the demon would have used Hilly's body to come through. That, she said, was what is different about this possession. Possible long-term integration, and then this business about the devil's doorway. There was a laptop on a side table next to the chaise, and she turned it to face me. I'd not noticed her using it and was startled to find an image of a page from a book. It looked old, mottled brown with rough edges. On it was an illustration of a door. Above the door, spelt out in capital letters, Quod Diaboli Annua, the Devil's Door. And underneath, the name of the author, Nuncio. I scanned up to the address bar of the browser and saw the domain ended in .va. This appeared to be an official Vatican City site. I knew that the Holy See controlled their domain suffix and only allowed it for official use. I immediately wanted to ask Aunt Daphne how the hell she had access to a Vatican archive site, but when I looked back at her, she was smiling demurely, almost daring me to ask. I focused instead on the book. I asked her if she'd read it, and she nodded. Nuncio was a nom de plume for a Franciscan monk, whose real identity is unknown. Indeed, many think the name refers to more than one individual, as he managed to write books during the 14th, 15th, and 16th centuries. Nuncio, she said, was a secret Gnostic, and the story goes that he talked with an angel through a crack in his cell wall. And through this, he gained an understanding of the illusion of reality. Finally, and Daphne scrolled down to the verse which purported to show how a demon could use to possess body to enter our reality. And then she began to tell me her plan.
Here is today's instruction.
Watch Jeopardy, Alex Trebek's fun TV quiz game.
You have an email.
Encrypted message from Charles Seaton. Apologies that this update has taken so long. They have me working in the animal pens for the last few weeks, and I've had no access at all to floor 19. I managed to get transferred just yesterday, when one of the regulars down there came over with a nasty case of food poisoning. I wonder where he picked that up from, eh? So, last night, I was able to get to the anomalies wing. I was just there to clean the floor, but I was able to spend a good while outside her room. The viewing ports are left unlocked, and I left hers open as I pretended to clean. Her bed is opposite the door, against the far wall, so I was no more than 10 feet away from her. There's a blue light protocol during the night, but it's bright enough in the occupants' room to see what they're up to. Elizabeth, or whatever its name is, looked awake. She was sat bolt upright in her bed, with her eyes open. For a moment, I thought she was looking straight at me, but she had that glassy look they get when they're seeing somewhere else. You're gonna have to take my word for what happened next. I didn't have a camera with me. They make sure of that when you clock into work. But even if I did, I doubt I would have been able to record what I saw. I had to keep pretending to clean as I watched her. So I kept looking away and then back again. It took a few minutes, but I realised I was beginning to see something quite different just before my eyes focused back on her. I remembered the briefing that Strauss gave us about how you can start to see the cracks in the illusion out of the corner of your eye. The little sight, he called it, from that book I was supposed to read. Anyway, I deliberately angled myself so I could see through the viewing port to the white wall beside her bed. Without moving my eyes, I concentrated on what I could see of her in my peripheral vision. It was a tiny effect at first. The motion I'd previously noticed seemed to be like tiny squiggles of light, all writhing over each other like transparent maggots. And they only appeared in front of the girl. Honestly, at that point it didn't look any different to what you see after staring into a bright light, or the shapes that can appear when it's really dark. Strauss talked about seeing the cracks in the illusion, but I never knew he meant it quite so literally. The more I looked at her like that, the more the space between those writhing shapes grew. And there was a light between them. Not bright, a glow, like something was hot. As the spaces widened, this glow looked like it was shining through thin cracks that ran across the surface of the girl. No, that's not right. It wasn't like her skin was cracking open. It was the area around her. The very space she was occupying. The glowing areas widened and began to dim. My eyes were running with tears at this point, and I was afraid to blink in case I lost it. I saw snatches of what was there underneath, I think. Eyes. There were too many eyes. And they knew that I was there.
Delete spaces. Start with A.
Write 7. Left 2. Write 4. Write 14. Left 3. Left 18. Left 1. Write 21. Write 6. Write 1. Write 4. Left 16. Write 1.
Aunt Daphne had a way of talking to you that commanded your complete attention. I think it was something about the look on her face, the way her eyes moved over your features as she talked. She is taking in all of you as you listen, and you are compelled to do the same. Her plan hinged on whether or not the demon had managed to come through into our world in a physical way. If not, Aunt Daphne explained that there were ways of suppressing a demonic influence, even if the possessed human was a compliant and willing participant in the possession. If the demon had taken physical form, then we had to accept that Hilly Sanderson was no more. In that case, the demon would either look like Hilly, or, more likely, it had used the material of Hilly's body to form a new identity for itself. I have to say that this last part sent a chill through me. The demon could be anyone, anywhere, and we wouldn't know. Could it take the form of someone we know? I asked her. She answered, yes. Depending on its lineage and position in the hierarchy, it could even be able to change its appearance after the fact. So, a shapeshifter then, or a skinwalker, or whatever you wanted to call them. I realized I had to tell the others this as soon as I could. I think up until that point, we all assumed we should be on the lookout for Hilly herself. When I asked as to how on earth we would find this demon, be it inside Hilly Sanderson or outside, Aunt Daphne explained that she would have to lend me something. She nodded to the boy that had let me into the roof hatch earlier. He had been standing at the door the entire time, and upon receiving some unspoken signal, he left the room. Moments later, he returned with a wooden box. It seemed to be a cube, about 6 inches across and inlaid with brass decoration. The boy handed it to Aunt Daphne, who opened it. She looked inside, nodded, and turned the box around so I could see.
Okay, everyone, if we can settle down now, our next speaker is going to tell you a little more about what you might expect in the field. Can you please welcome Dr. Harlan Strauss?
Thank you, everybody. Thank you, Jacqueline. Now, it is a great pleasure to be here talking to you all. And it is my duty to prepare you for what you might see out and about, on the job, so to speak. I know that you have all read the Tellurian Artifice, and some of you will have studied Franco's Liber Rimas. In both of these works, you will find accounts of the little sight, a phrase coined, of course, by Bauer herself. Though etymologically problematic, Bauer manages, as always, to take familiar words, string them together, and make something other. The little sight is a glimpse into exactly that. It is explained that as one becomes used to the idea of the great lie in which we are all trapped, one may begin to see the cracks in the illusion. As one is taught to pay attention to synchronous events, one must also note when the little sight comes calling. It could be a tickle in the corner of your eye, a physical manifestation triggered by your mind's desire to see the truth. It could be a feeling, like the feeling of being watched, or the shiver, as though someone has passed over your grave. Usually, we dismiss these. We rub our eye to stop it itching. We ignore the feelings of unease, attributing them to our imagination. And when we shiver, we put on a cardigan. It is your job, as seekers of the truth, to challenge yourself not to do these things. When you realize that the little sight is upon you, you must seek it out. Encourage it with tentative steps. Discover where the source of your unease lies, or where your watcher is lurking. And be prepared for what you may see. Any glimpse behind the curtain comes with risks. Perhaps you will only see into another place, another layer of the machine, a corridor which leads away into the gloom, or the great plateaus of another world. But maybe you will see something else there, something seemingly alive. The denizens of the other places, idler, if you will, are less easy to see and more difficult to look at. Those who brave the little sight risk their sanity for the sake of knowing their own truth. But Is that not why we are all here?
Hi there. This is Al Ashworth, creator of the Strange Circle podcast. I really hope you enjoyed this episode and invite you to visit the Strange Circle website for more facts, stories, and clues. And if you're feeling generous, please sponsor me on Patreon. This podcast is a labour of love, and any help you can give is gratefully received. You can find all the information at pod.strangecircle.org. That's pod.strangecircle.org. Thanks for listening.